Woke up after midnight, both my arms and legs were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call. The WGN hotline. I have edema on my thighs, pink stuff in my eyes, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. We're just talking, Doc and I are golf nuts, about the end of Bay Hill. Best leaderboard I've seen in forever.
It really was. You just wish Tiger could add a little bit more of a run there on that back nine, but I don't think anybody was going to stop Rory.
No, and it was good to see Rory win again.
Yeah, it really was. A little emotion in his interview afterwards. You could tell it hit him.
Masters 2 weeks away. Is that right? Where are they playing this weekend?
Texas, I believe. Houston.
Is it usually Houston right before the Masters?
Yep.
All right. All right. For those of you who hate golf, good news. The golf talk's over for the moment. All right. Let's talk. You know, the House and the Senate and Congress. Congress, Doc, as you know from the medical field, Congress has an approval rating just above a nasty rash. And that's probably higher than it should be. And the House in particular appears to have lost its mind. Well, last week, the House failed to pass a bill that Senate passed. It's called Right to Try. Explain what this is in your world.
Yeah. So Right to Try, in the simplest terms, is it gives dying patients a pathway to get access to experimental drugs that the FDA has not totally approved.
So if you deem me terminally ill or close to that, and I've got 2 years to go, I would be, if this bill were to pass, I would be eligible for trial drugs that not yet approved by the FDA?
Correct. Correct.
Well, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's very interesting when you look at it. 38 states have already approved this, including Illinois. So Rauner signed it a year ago. Indiana, Governor Pence, or Vice President Pence, when he was the governor of Indiana, he signed it. But it's at 38 states, but the other states don't have it. So going between states is cumbersome and really doesn't allow for any federal oversight of it at all. So some people say, gosh, let's at least give somebody who's dying a chance. And then the other advocates for the FDA say, you know, trying a medication that can be more toxic and ineffective isn't doing our system any good.
The restrictions around this are kind of crazy, too, Doc. Talk about a little bit the terms that have to be used, either life-threatening disease or condition, or maybe you've tried something yet and it didn't work, you're going to try again. So kind of prioritize that, too.
Yeah, it's interesting, Andrea. When you look at it, and that's the part that I think that they're struggling with, is when 38 states have it, they each get to make up the rules differently. So some states are going to say impending death within a short period of time. Others are going to say, excuse me, that you have a terminal illness. Well, you know, there are some terminal illnesses you can live with for years. So it really depends, and I think that's what they're going to try to struggle. As a matter of fact, it's going to go back to vote this week, but they're going to try to struggle to get their arms around what, how are they going to define that?
And Doc, too, who gets priority over this? As far as like, you have to apply for it, is it if I apply first, kind of like a transplant? You know, just because I apply first, you might have the more serious condition. So
well,
who gets accepted?
Yeah, that's the other interesting part about it right now. There's something called expanded access, and that's what the pharmaceutical companies are saying. We don't need Right to Try because we have something called expanded access. Expanded access allows you to write or to contact a pharmaceutical company, make your case, and then they approve compassionate use of a new drug. What these guys are saying is with Right to Try, we don't want to go through all of those hassles. We want to be able to just do it. The part that's also interesting is who pays for the medication, because it hasn't gone to market, it hasn't been priced, and the pharmaceutical company can say, wait, time out. I don't have enough of this drug to run my trial. I can't give it to somebody as a compassionate use.
But is it compassionate, or is it I'm going to die and I want a shot to live?
That's the argument. I mean, that's the argument that Trump made during his inaugural address, right? People shouldn't have to leave this country to go to try a drug. We should be able to do
it's
that
true.
Here.
It's absolutely true. So who's against it?
Oh, boy. American Cancer Society, Cystic Fibrosis Society, a lot of physicians. And the pharmaceutical companies are pretty much staying silent on it for the most part. But the others are looking at it saying, wait a second, we have a process in place that we know is safe. Why would we allow this to happen? And, you know, the other side, the compassionate side, people are saying, well, wait, they don't have a chance. They are going to die, and they want to try this drug.
Yeah, and it seems to be the larger, can you correct me if I'm wrong here, but the larger concern also seems to be people protecting their areas for the future. In other words, maybe this is legitimate, you tell me, but if I have a trial drug and there is a case of someone or more than one using it, maybe they show some initial results, now there's a little media generation, and then they actually die, and the drug gets a bad reputation. Maybe the drug goes away, when if it goes through the normal approval process, it could help others. Is that part of the concern?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. What they're saying is, boy, someone who is very ill already takes this drug and has a very bad adverse reaction, which they have to report to the FDA. And that adverse reaction may have nothing to do with the drug because it was used, quote unquote, inappropriately on a patient, a group of patients that they weren't even focusing on. So that is their concern. Their concern is keep the process clean so that when the drug does come out, it's worked in the right dosing at the right with the right patients. Because that's what all the clinical trials do. One, you know, phase one, is it a safe drug? Phase two, is it an effective drug? And phase three, is it more effective than the current drugs that we have? Those are the simplistic ways to look at the phases. And they're looking at saying, wait, if something's already gone through phase one, or can I even get on a phase one trial, something that hasn't even been proven to be safe?
So there's legitimate arguments against it. Certainly there's arguments for it. How does Europe do it differently?
Europe has more of a individual country stance. So they don't go with the whole European nation stance. Countries do it differently, you know, and the vast majority of them, I'll tell you, are much more right to try than limiting it. I think you'll see that around the world. I think you'll see that the FDA is kind of our protective measure that we don't see as much. That being said, drugs get approved faster in the United States than they do in Europe, which is people always say, oh, a drug can get released quicker in Europe, and it's not true at all. It's faster at the FDA.
So as this goes on, you said 38 states have already approved it. Would the federal law be different, and or should we just wait for the other 12 to join in?
Well, I think the nice thing to be is if you had a federal law and it set the guidelines and everyone's playing on the same field, then it's much better for the individuals going, and it's also better for the pharmaceutical companies because now they know what the rules are versus someone in the state of Kansas versus someone in the state of Illinois, and they're going to the pharmaceutical company to get this drug that's in phase two. Now the company's got to say, well, wait a second, who gets it? Which one? Who should I give it to? Because the definitions can be different.
We'll come back and talk about cigarettes. Did you ever smoke, Doc?
I've never had a lit cigarette in my mouth.
Yeah, neither have I. However, both of my parents were such smokers. I probably have more in my lungs than people who have smoked. Does that get? But it goes away when you get away from it. And I guess I've been away from it for 20 years or more. Well, longer than that.
It has to help, yeah.
30 years. That's probably got to help.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. That's Dr. Kevin Most. We'll talk about smoking in a moment. We'll get back to Dr. Kevin Most here, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, in just a second. But, Andrea, what's happening?
Well, Chicago police investigating, get this, Steve, a spree of at least a dozen reported armed robberies that have occurred in the past hour on the northwest side. We're talking about the 3400 block of West Montrose Avenue. Limousine was reportedly carjacked near Montrose and Kimball, and then these robbers reportedly went on this this spree and tried to rob at least a dozen people. So we're following this very closely. This is in the 17th Police District in Albany Park, so we're keeping an eye on that as well.
There's lots of businesses on that stretch, but I don't know how many would have been open at this hour. There's a 7-Eleven in Bernard in Montrose, you know, and it's 24 hours, right? But there's a Galaxy Furniture down the street, Salvation Army store. So there's a CVS. Maybe that's a 24-hour. I'm just wondering how much money they could get.
Boy, no kidding. And people on the street, too. You know, they can always target them.
Yeah, but who's up?
Well, people going to work now. So this is all within
bizarre.
The past hour.
A dozen in an hour.
Yep, we'll keep you updated.
Good Lord. And they were in a limo?
Well, that's how it started. That's how it started, with a reported carjacking of a limo in 3400 block of West Montrose.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Brazen, nutty, and more.
Yes.
Back to Dr. Kevin Most. My father, 3 to 4 packs a day, cigarettes. My mother, probably a pack and a half. There's a lot of smoke in my house, and it's not good. But this isn't about secondhand smoke. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, Steve, it's interesting. You know, when we look at how many people are smoking now and what's going on with smoke, you know, we still have 500,000 people that die from tobacco-related illnesses, whether it's lung cancer, COPD, strokes, heart attacks, all of those things. And one of the biggest things that the FDA is looking at now, and it's interesting, they attempted to do this a couple years ago, but now it really looks like it's going to be going forward, is limiting the amount of nicotine that is allowed in cigarettes.
So this is restricting the golf ball. This is taking something and lessening the effect of it. But in this case, for those who can't quit smoking or choose not to, maybe less dangerous?
Oh, absolutely. So what people have to realize is that nicotine doesn't cause cancer. But cigarettes have somewhere between 45 and 70 what we call carcinogens. And those are cancer-causing compounds in cigarettes. Nicotine is just the hook, and nicotine is so highly addictive. I mean, it's up there when you look at addiction rates. It's up there with, you know, opium and opioids and cocaine. So, I mean, it's very highly addictive. So the estimates are that if they can limit the amount of nicotine in here, you'll talk about rates dropping dramatically on new smokers, and also extremely high rates on those who really want to quit but have been unable to.
Where does it go from here?
Well, right now it's in the public period, so right now the FDA will allow 90 days of comments, so we'll see what happens here with the comments. I think you'll have you'll have tobacco companies making their case, and I think you'll have health-related industries making their case. And then the other thing that they really have to discuss is this going to happen gradually over time, or is it going to be an immediate, you know, we want you to cut right now down dramatically? So those are going to be the things that are going to be discussed. But for the first time ever, it certainly looks like the FDA is going to push this.
I say this tongue-in-cheek, Doc, but what will Illinois have left to tax at this point?
Andrea, it's very interesting. If you look at tax rates across the entire United States on cigarettes, it's unbelievable. I mean, New York is almost, $4.35 a pack. Massachusetts, $3.50 a pack. You know, Illinois, $2. So it is a lot of tax revenue that you're going to lose if we decrease the number of smokers. But that shouldn't be something that should hold us up, obviously.
It is a story we'll continue to watch. I do remember growing up with those smokers in my house that there were light versions of cigarettes, but that's different than what we're talking about?
Yeah. Yep. See, the nicotine is still there. That's the lighter version, has less chemicals in it, and maybe a little bit less toxic is what their claim used to be, when in fact it really didn't have that much of a difference there. So, you know, yeah, we will see what's going to happen. It will be interesting, because if we can decrease the number of kids that are addicted to cigarettes early, and you're talking about 3,000 kids try their first cigarette every single day. Now, the other thing we really need to talk about, and we'll do it in the future, is, you know, the craze of vaping right now and how it's really going to impact the youth.
Is that going up, going down, staying the same? What do you know?
Going up, actually, unfortunately, and you probably see it. You probably drive by malls and see vaping stores right now, and e-cigarettes are everywhere because everyone says, oh, they're safer, and the jury's out on that, to be honest with you, although a lot of companies are making that claim.
It's Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Making life better. How about that for a simple summation? Doc, thanks as always.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
See you later.